And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host, and we will be talking about the developments in Syria. Particularly, we're going to pay some attention to the matter of the Kurdish. I think in the old days they called this the Kurdish question. We'll be speaking to Zafar Bengash, and then later in the program we are going to talk to Stephen Gowans. Stephen Gowans is watching John Kerry and others who seem to have definitely have not given up on Plan B. Today is the May 9, and it's time to say thank you to those who fought against and defeated fascism. And it's a victory day, and everybody in the world should be celebrating it. And we need to remark on this because some people are enthusiastic for cold wars, and so whether or not the war was significant goes up and down like a bouncing ball. And we need to point out on this 71st anniversary of the victory over Nazi Germany, what was won. The war was fought on the German side by people calling themselves the master race, who intended and indeed tried to physically eliminate, annihilate people. And particularly the Jews of Europe. It was a hideous phenomenon. It had to be defeated, but at a very high price. And just to be very clear, the people of the Soviet Union, and led by the Russian part of that population, paid the price in terms of 27 million to 30 million. It's give or take 3 million. And National Socialism, fascism was defeated. And it gave rise to the cause of anti-colonialism and the equality of people. And this is all apropos of Syria. They recognizing the sovereignty of states that had formerly been colonies. And remember such phrases as Charles de Gaulle saying, Algeria is France. It turned out Algeria was Algeria. And very importantly for North America, the black population, which had been suffering legal segregation and continued to suffer it after World War II, were at least had the momentum and the inspiration of the struggle against a racist ideology, and were able to put the question, and the civil rights movements developed around the idea, all of us fought together to defeat this ugly idea, and yet we have official segregation practiced. Legalist segregation was practiced in America. So many veterans came back and spoke about, well, if we are the heroes, if people in arms who actually did go into battle and lost their friends and limbs, et cetera, in those struggles, then why can't they have equality at home? Ossie Davis, the great actor, had the line as he was, I think, on aboard a warship returning. He came to under the Golden Gate Bridge and he said, my fight for freedom is just beginning. And that proved true also of a U.S. Army officer, Jackie Robinson, who had, while fighting against fascism, found himself mistreated and subject to racism. One story I will not forget was just a brief letter I read in the New York Times by a black World War II veteran, and he said, I once stood on a street in a city in Texas and looked in the window in a restaurant which said it did not serve blacks, and sitting at the tables were German POWs with their happy white American guards. So that's what you have to remember. That struggle was fought, and it set the issue of do you believe all people are created equal or not? And happily, the victory was won, and then it had to be refought by the people who were colonized. And another quote you always want to remember, post-World War II, is Winston Churchill said, I do not intend to preside over the liquidation of the British Empire. Too bad for him, because it went ahead and got liquidated anyway. It isn't, and incidentally, of course, in today's subject of Syria, etc., the struggle goes on. We have a world where Western capitals still think that they get to determine what goes on everywhere in the globe. And that's what we really have to address. Is it so? And I think of we're going to be talking about whether or not international law, why isn't international law applied? The great leader of Mexico, Benito Juarez, said that the law is my shield and my sword. But he was a lawyer and a judge, and he understood the importance of law. And, for example, when I mentioned civil rights movement a while ago, it has to be made a law that you cannot discriminate against people. And you can't use little fancy games or whatnot. The law is the law, and we are all equal before the law. And if we're not, we have the right to rebel against any system that says that there are inferiors and superiors, et cetera. And another point that Benito Juarez made, and it's appropriate on May the 9th, where the other day we had people talking about Cinco de Mayo, that involved Benito Juarez, he said that mutual respect is peace. And when we have, I'm editorializing, but that's what I do, is when you have a president of one country tells the country, the president of another country, he has to step down, that is not mutual respect. And speaking of mutual respect, here's someone we respect very much, is Zafar Bengash, crescent-online.net. Are you there, Zafar?
Hello, Phil. Yes, thank you very much. Appreciate your kindness.
Well, we're always glad to talk to you, and it's a very needful interview today because a few days ago, someone took a photograph of our brave soldiers in what they called Iraq, and they were wearing a shoulder patch that was not an Iraqi shoulder patch. It seemed to be a shoulder patch with something to do with the Kurdish area. I guess the Kurdish, you'll have to tell me what that was, but why is that a problem?
Well, essentially, in Iraq, you have the Iraqi Kurdistan, where they have established a de facto independent state, although it has not been legally recognized, but there are, of course, Canadian as well as American forces there. Last week, one of the American soldiers was actually killed there, about 16, 20 miles outside Mosul, which is the area that has been occupied by these ISIL terrorist groups. And since the Iraqi Kurdistan government is not an internationally recognized government, so any external forces that wear their uniforms are, in a sense, implying that they recognize that government that is established over there. You see, Iraq has a central government. Unfortunately, it is weak. It is not able to extend its authority across the entire country. But if outside powers support and lend credibility to that autonomous Kurdish region, then what they are implying is that Iraq is heading towards partition and that these outside powers and forces are helping Iraq's disintegration.
Yeah, and I have to ask you, can't we or shouldn't we be asking maybe the question, is this some type of neocolonial game? Because the Canadian population keeps hearing we're there to help Iraq. But I saw a quote the other day that I really questioned. That some officer said, well, Iraq is approving our being there. But I wonder how much discussion actually happened. We seem to want to be there. We spoke to Mr. Taylor of the, I forget his military magazine, it's a very, very good magazine, but he says that you don't see any Iraqi flags in the region. And why is Canada sort of asking for that job? Is something suspicious about that?
Oh, absolutely. You see, the thing is that whatever is taking place in Iraq and in Syria. Both countries are being targeted by these external forces. Surely the first step would be that any external forces that intervene in these countries ought to do so with the permission of the central government in these countries, whether it is Iraq or Syria. Mm-hmm. Now, in the case of Iraq, one could say that perhaps both U.S. and Canadian forces are there with the knowledge of the Iraqi government, but whether the Iraqi government has authorized them to operate in Iraqi Kurdistan is a very different issue. Mm-hmm. I don't think that the Iraqi government would support anything like that. The Iraqi central government in Baghdad is extremely worried about the manner in which the Kurdistan Autonomous Region is conducting itself, the manner in which they enter into international agreements in violation of the central authority in Baghdad, mm-hmm. and the manner in which they are consolidating their hold on that region are extremely worrying developments. Mm-hmm. And earlier on, you mentioned this aspect about, colonialist sort of mindset. In fact, what is taking place both in Iraq and Syria, these are actually scenarios that are working according to a script that was laid out by an American colonel, Colonel Ralph Peters, as far back as June of 2005 in the American Soldier magazine, in which he talked about blood borders. And what he said was that since the Middle East is a patchwork of borders that were drawn up by colonial powers and a number of ethnic groups have been broken up, therefore what needs to be done is that we need to redraw the borders of the Middle East so that these ethnic groups can be regrouped and brought together. Now, that's a very, very dangerous notion. Although to start with, it is true that all of these borders were drawn by the colonialists at the beginning of the last century, mm-hmm. And these were completely unnatural borders. Mm-hmm. But to redraw these borders and make new borders and create new entities out of them is going to bring even more disaster.
It's still the same problem. It's like asking the same surgeon who botched the first operation, now we want you to do it again.
Exactly. And if
why not fire him? Say, no, you cannot be involved. You are the one who made the mess. You cannot come to the meeting.
Exactly. See, that's what is happening over there. So although the original argument, it is correct that those borders are artificial borders and they were drawn arbitrarily without even asking the people as to whether they wanted these borders or not. But now to say that now you want to redraw those borders, and the real game, of course, is that all of these countries are being split up and dissected in order to weaken them more so that Israel would be protected. That is basically the game that is being played. And unfortunately, in that, we see that the Kurdish population, that historically has been dealt a very rough hand. They have been mistreated in the past. But the solution that is being offered is to create more mess in that region. It's not going to solve the problem. It'll create, destabilize that region further, and it'll be engulfed in conflict for decades to come.
And by the way, if we take the larger picture that was given to us sometimes by U.S. spokespersons saying that if we could remove Assad in Syria, then we would be closer to removing the government of Iran. And this area is a border with Iran, the ones that we're talking, this Kurdish region.
Oh, absolutely. You see, the Kurds are basically distributed between Iran, Iraq, Turkey, Syria, and of course also Armenia. The largest group of Kurds is in Turkey. And in Iraq, the Kurds have established an autonomous region. And of all of these various countries, the Kurds in Iran have the greatest measure of stability. The central government in Iran provides them facilities, and the Kurds there are not in any way dissatisfied. They don't want to break up the country. But in Iraq, Turkey, and Syria, they're operating in a way that they definitely want to split up the country. Mm-hmm. So, of course, the Kurds in Syria have taken control of a large swath of territory in the north of Syria that borders Turkey. But Turkey is extremely unhappy with that because Turkey is worried that these Kurds from Syria, if they were to take effective control of this region, would then link up with the Kurds in Turkey. And therefore, that would provide them a very, very strong base, and they might even declare their own Kurdish state. Mm-hmm. This is the nightmare scenario that the Turks are extremely worried about. Mm-hmm. And this also, unfortunately, sort of plays into the argument that the Turks are making, that they want to create a safe zone in northern Syria, which, of course, is not in order to protect the people of Syria. It is because Turkey wishes to occupy that region in order to prevent the Kurds from achieving any of their political objectives. Mm-hmm. You see, over the last few days, there have been certain arrangements between the Kurds in northern Syria, particularly around this region called Qamishli, where there is an airport, where that airport strip is being extended by the Americans. Mm. The Americans have also sent in an additional 250 special forces, ostensibly to fight against ISIL. but I believe that's just...
Well, when you fight, you know, there are usually casualties. I think they've lost one person, but that doesn't qualify as fighting.
That's correct, yes. And
it's a sign probably not much is going on that front, other than some type of intelligence operation.
That's correct, yes. Basically, I think what the Americans are doing is that they want to land more equipment over there. I mean, there are two airports in that region. Both of them are under Kurdish control. One is Qamishli Airport. The other is Ibn Hajar Airport. And both airports are controlled by the Kurds. These are the Kurds of Syria. And over the last few days, actually, there was fighting around Qamishli region, and then a ceasefire was agreed upon on Sunday, which was yesterday. And the two sides agreed that whatever areas their forces are in control of, that is where their forces would remain. You see, for the Syrian government, they cannot possibly fight on all fronts. Mm-hmm. So they have adopted a sort of a more nuanced approach to the Kurds. They don't want to fight the Kurds in the north and then have to take on ISIL in Aleppo and, mm-hmm. you know, further down around Damascus and other regions. The Syrian government wishes to concentrate on fighting these ISIL terrorists. Mm-hmm. And so they are prepared to allow the Kurds in the north to have a degree of autonomy and to control certain regions. Mm-hmm. But that's where the danger lies, that by allowing that, it opens the way for the Americans to come in. And so now the Americans are involved. In fact, they've been involved since February of this year, extending the airstrip at Qamishli that would then allow for these large transport planes, particularly C-130 planes, to mm-hmm. bring in equipment, essentially military equipment, that the Americans want to give to their favorite so-called moderate rebels or whatever.
The moderates.
That they call moderate, yes. Because, you know, just because they are America's
friends. I read a quote from this U.S. Intelligence chief named Clapper. He said that a moderate is not ISIS. So if you belong to another terrorist group, you're moderate.
I mean, you're
only ISIS is terrorist. Maybe it has to do with the type of knives they use. This is Zafar Bengais, crescent-online.net. I have to ask you, very important, there is a battle for Aleppo. What's your estimate of what's happening there? How important is that battle?
Well, Aleppo, of course, is the largest city in Syria. It was the commercial capital of Syria before it was destroyed. 80% of Aleppo is under government control, but the ISIL, al-Nusra Front terrorists continue to operate there. In fact, they were able to grab an important village by the name of Khan Tuman, which is southwest of Aleppo. They took control of it, or they occupied it last Friday. And prior to that, the Syrian army had liberated it from these terrorist groups. So it seems that these terrorist groups still are able to mount effective operations.
Well, by the way, and apropos when you're going to say that, this Turkish border is still, they are still passing, apparently efficiently, new fighters into this zone, right?
Absolutely.
And with increasingly high-quality weapons.
Yes, exactly. Heavy weapons. They are still being smuggled in through the Turkish border. And, of course, the Turkish military and intelligence agencies are deeply involved in it. The Syrian government has said it on a number of occasions, including the Russian government. They have said that it is, in order for us to have peace in Syria, it is absolutely crucial to seal that border with Turkey. Now, unfortunately, it is something that the Americans do not agree to because of obvious reasons. They don't want the Syrian government to be able to take control of this vital region and to seal that border. So it results in the Syrian army being stretched considerably, and weapons are still being smuggled, including heavy weapons, to these terrorist groups, with the consequence that you see they are able to mount operations and capture or recapture territory again where they are able to...
And they targeted Iranians. There were some Iranians killed.
That is correct,
yes. I was wondering if that might even, certainly in the realm of psychological warfare, to target an entity like that is to try to make a point.
Well, of course, you see, they do that. Of course, the Iranians had their military advisors over there, the Revolutionary Guards advisors. I think 13 or so of them were killed, and 21 were wounded in the battle for Khan Tuman. And I have no doubt that the Syrian army, in conjunction with Iranian Revolutionary Guards advisors, as well as Hezbollah fighters, would mount a counterattack, and ultimately they will liberate Khan Tuman. But what it means is that areas that were liberated previously from these terrorist groups have been retaken by the terrorists, and of course now more fighting would have to be waged, more sacrifices have to be made to reclaim those areas from the terrorists. But the crucial point, as you pointed out, and I want to reemphasize, is that unless and until the Turkish border is sealed, I'm afraid fighting in the north of Syria will not subside, because if fighters can continue to be smuggled into Syria from abroad, weapons can be smuggled in, then obviously the aim is to continue the fighting in Syria indefinitely. Although, as you know, right now a meeting is taking place of the so-called Friends of Syria group of countries, which includes the usual suspects, the countries that have been sort of, you know, providing weapons.
And George Orwell is attending the meeting.
Absolutely.
The Friends of Syria, yes. Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, exactly.
The Saudis.
Yeah. And so they, like, you know, John Kerry is there, and, you know, Britain, Germany, Italy, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Jordan, all of these people, the same, you know, group of sort of, you know, countries that have been involved in creating mayhem in Syria. They are meeting again and making ridiculous demands of how they want to bring about peace in Syria.
Now, this is Avraham Ben-Gesh. It's crescent-online.net, where you find excellent writing. And, Zafar, I know you have to go, but I want to ask you quickly. Can you tell us, were you surprised, and what has this happened with this prime minister who just suddenly been told to go home by the president?
Yeah, you see, he wanted to sort of say, well, look, you know, he presented an alternative point of view. He said that there is a constitution in Turkey. The constitution says that executive authority resides in the hands of the prime minister. But, of course, that's something that Erdogan, who's the president, he wants to change the constitution. He wants to turn Turkey into a presidential form of government and to change the constitution so that he would have full powers and full authority, and the prime minister would simply be a figurehead person. And so, you know, although the prime minister, Ahmet Davutoglu, is basically a protege of Erdogan, but he wouldn't even, Erdogan wouldn't even tolerate mild criticism or any questioning of his decision or an alternative point of view. So unfortunately, there's another casualty in the Turkish political arena.
Well, thank you for that. I assume that Obama will not ask Erdogan to step down for his behavior.
Not anytime soon, no.
No. Well, Zafer Bengash, thank you very, very much. Crescent-online.net.
Thank you very much, Phil. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Zafer Bengash, and it's an excellent site. And, of course, we appreciate the commentary because you will not find it in your daily press. And matter of fact, we're running out of publications in which you can find any good commentary. People are all over the world scratching their heads. The great British paper, The Guardian, is now becoming a joke for its coverage of matters to do with the Middle East. It's a sad situation.